कर्माणि
संगं
त्यक्त्वा
धनञ्जय
सिद्ध्यसिद्ध्यौ समो भूत्वा
समत्वं
योग उच्यते First words, Krishna gives a preliminary definition of yoga. He defines yoga in three verses, 48, 50 and 53. In 48, he is defining yoga as samatvam. Krishna introduced the word yoga for the first time in verse 39. Buddhi yoge to imam shunu. As the first time the word yoga came within the Bhagavad Gita. So now he is giving the first definition of yoga is samatvam. Samatvam is equanimity. Then in verse 15, he will give the definition yoga karmasu kaushalam. Yoga is the art of all work. And then in 53, he will give the highest definition of yoga as samadha vachala buddhis tada yogam avapsisi. So in one sense, Krishna's definitions are progressive. Here it is, samatvam, that is equanimity. Then in 15, it is karmasu kaushalam, that is art of work. Then in 53, it is samadha achala buddhis. Intelligence fixed in samadhi. So what does this mean, these three definitions? They are progressive levels. At one level, if you want to become spiritually minded, first, we have to become at least a little bit unexcited about material ups and downs. If we just think that material problems are so big that they are going to destroy me, then we can't even think about Krishna, because our full consciousness will be caught up in trying to solve the problem. Or if we think material pleasures are so wonderful, that how can I live without them? Then also we will have no consciousness available to fix it in Krishna. So, spiritual life in one sense begins with equanimity. And of course, at the pure and realized level also one will be naturally equipoised amidst ups and downs. But as sadhakas, we need to have some level of equanimity. So, equanimity is one level, which we can say is the starting level. Then, beyond that, it's not that the equanimity is a frozen inactivity. It's not that to be equanimous, a person is always going to be just sitting doing nothing. And he thinks that if I do something, then I'll get some result, I'll not get some result. Then what is the use? Then I'll lose my equanimity, but in both ways. If I get the result, I'll become happy. If I don't get the result, I'll become miserable. So therefore, let me not do any activity, then I can stay equanimous. That is not what Krishna is recommending. The next level he says, karmasu kaushalam. It is the kaushala is expert. Or artistic. Art of work, Prabhupada translates it. That means there is a special way to do work. Everybody is going to do work. And people have this idea, work is worship. So Jayadrith Maharaj says, if work is worship, then the donkey is the greatest worship.
Because he works harder than everyone.
So it's not that work in and of itself is worship. Work can become worship. And when will work become worship? When it is done in a proper way. And what is that proper way? That proper way is actually a state of consciousness. So that is what Krishna is going to talk about here. So I'll just explain that. How can we draw two circles over here?
Shapes.
Where are shapes?
Here.
Okay. here. Anyway, circle is
whatever is okay.
See, in one sense, work and worship are two distinct things, because work is in the material realm and worship is connected with God. So say this is the circle of you can't write over. No problem. Okay, just clear enough for our purposes. This is the circle of work. And then we have the circle of, say, worship. Work is what we do in this world for the purpose of our bodily maintenance or for our material prosperity. Worship is what we do for God. So, when I say work is worship, the phrase is itself very ambiguous. Does that mean that work itself is the object of worship? Very few people will think like that. You know, if at all there is the object of worship is there, they will think the wealth that I get from work, that is the object of worship. So for people, wealth, money is God. But if one is genuinely thinking that, yes, I want to worship God through my work. Actually, if you look in the 18th chapter, there Krishna will describe that swakarmana tam abhyarcha. So, actually, swakarmanatam abhyarcha. This is often mistranslated as work is worship. But what is this swakarmanatam abhyarcha? Actually, this study is something substantially different. Swakarmana, by one's own work, tam abhyarcha, worship him. That means the verse is telling, it is not that work is worship. Make your work into a worship. Or worship him with your work. Swakarmana tam abhyasya, 1846. Siddhim vindati manavah. That when one worships the Lord with one's work, then one will attain perfection. That means that Krishna is telling that it is not that automatically work will be worshipped. No, we have to do something special by which our work will become worship. And what is that special? That is the art of all work. That is the consciousness. So there is a circle of work, there is a circle of worship. Now we have to act within the intersection of those circles. If I only do worship, say I am doing deity worship, I am chanting the holy names, then actually speaking, yes, I am worshipping, but I am not doing anything directly in this world. Or if I am going out and doing my engineering studies, or I am going out and doing a software job, or I am having my own business, then I am doing my work. But then that is rarely what I do with worship. So in one sense, work is what we do in the world. Worship is what we do for Krishna. So where is the intersection? Actually, the common element, work, generally worship will be there in the temple or in the temple room of our house. Work will be in our office. So the venues are different. And largely the activities are also different. Worship will have generally, as more devotional activities. So, if we see the venues and activities, both are different. So, here, let's go to the next one. So, actually, both of them have their distinctive places, venues, and activities. But what is common in the two is the consciousness. It is the same person who is having his consciousness here and who is concerned his consciousness there. It is the same person who is doing this and who is doing that. So if our consciousness is fixed in Krishna, then that work will become worship. So what is common is consciousness. And only when, that means I am physically in my work, but my heart is still in my worship. That means I am thinking that this work is done for Krishna. Then that work will become worship. So in work and worship, the places and actions are different. But the consciousness can be the same. Now the consciousness can be the same. Now which consciousness should be there? Should the work consciousness come to worship, or should the worship consciousness come to work? Yeah. Now for most people, the work consciousness comes to worship. What does that mean? That means I come to worship, but I'm thinking, oh, this problem is there, no, this problem is there, I have to solve that, I have to solve that. So then, even the worship becomes a work. The work doesn't become worship. Worship becomes a work. That means worship is something, it's a burden, I have to get it done. So if work consciousness comes to worship, then even worship becomes work. By work I mean mundane. And if worship consciousness comes to work, then even work becomes divine. Then work becomes worship. So work is mundane, worship is divine. But there is an intersection possible. There is an intersection possible, but it is not automatic. There has to be conscious effort for that. And what is that effort? That effort is, say, our morning sadhana, our philosophical education, by which we understand that the spiritual goal of life is primary. And it is not that I am trying to achieve big things in this world. Actually, I am trying to achieve something beyond this world. And this world is the means to achieve that. This world is the arena for my service. This world is not the goal of my service. What is the difference between arena and goal? Arena is the place where something is done. This person is placed the arena of my service. But it is not that I want to win this world as the goal of my service. This world is the arena of my service. The next world is the goal of my service. So only when that is there together, then actually the work will become worship. So this world is the arena of our service. Arena means the place where activities are done. And the next world is the goal of our service. So otherwise, if this world is the arena and this world is the goal, then that work is not worship. That work is simply work. Only when there is a proper balance of both, then when does work become worship? So in the last definition Krishna will give, he will say, samadha achalabha this tada yogam avapsasi. So in the last definition he explains that actually, when a person is completely fixed in transcendence, then he is achala buddhi. He is fixed. That is, he has achieved the highest realization. So this is the beginning of Krishna's instruction. So, what is he telling in this particular world? Arjuna, be situated in yoga. And situated in yoga, that means sangam tektva, sukhiva, the attachment to the fruits. And he makes it more clear. What does it mean? Siddhya siddhya samabhutva. That is, be equipoised in happiness and distress, in victory and failure. And this is equanimity, will be called as yoga. Now, what will be the result of this? Before telling that, Krishna will contrast this activity with some other kind of activity. In this verse, he is recommending detached activity. And in the next verse, he will more explicitly contrast with it with detached activity. Although he's contrasted earlier, in 41, 42, 43, 44, when he was talking about Bhogeshwar Prasaktanam, he had not positively described how to perform karma yoga or how to work in a detached. We just glorified it, yes. We will be one pointed in this, we will attain eternal result, important, important. How to do it? So now he's talking about the difference not in theory but in practical action. What is the difference? described in the next verse. Srila Prabhupada uses an interesting phrase over here. The ever-disturbing senses. What are the nature of the senses? Ever-disturbing. So it's not that the senses are going to come to rest sometime. Only when they become purified and they have won the war, till then, they will be prepared. It's ever-disturbing senses. So let's go to the next verse. Dure niyavaram karma.
Dure niyavaram karma.
Buddhi yoga dhananjaya.
Buddhi yoga dhananjaya.
Buddhau sharanam anvichha.
Buddhau sharanam anvichha.
Rupana palahetava.
Rupana palahetava.
So, dure na, far away, keep it far away. What, you know what? Avaram karma. So, vara means blessing. Avaram means that it is not blessed, that it is cursed. Inauspicious work. Durena yavaram karma. How you, buddhi yoga adhanandhi. How one can keep it away? By buddhi, by the practice of buddhi, by buddhi yoga. Now, buddhi yoga, Allah Krishna has used this word several times. Buddhi yoga is my mom, buddhi yoga. Actually, buddhi yoga is not a specific type of yoga. There is no yoga sadhana called buddhi yoga. That is karma yoga, there is jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, there is bhakti yoga. So what exactly is buddhi yoga? So buddhi yoga is a sort of it's a stretchable term. Stretchable term Stretchable means what? Like you have a rubber band, you stretch it, stretches it. So it's a stretchable term. It has different arenas of meaning, different connotation and notice in this. Stretchable term that literally means, what does it literally mean? It's connection through intelligence. That's what it literally means. And it practically means, say for example, in chapter 2, when Krishna uses it, it refers to karma yoga. Then in chapter 10, he refers to it in 10.10, the famous verse. Then again in 18, he refers to it in Chetasa Sarva Karmani Mai Sanyasya Matpara Buddhi Yoga Upashitya Machitta Satatam Bhava, 1857. So there it refers to Bhakti Yoga. So you know the yoga ladder, it is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. They are like steps on the yoga ladder. So Buddhi Yoga is a stretchable term that can refer to the Karma Yoga ladder or it can refer to the Bhakti Yoga ladder also. So words, only in dictionaries have frozen meanings. In sentences, in real language, in real life, words have always contextual meanings. So depending on what is the subject that Krishna is talking about, accordingly Krishna will use specific words. Now in principle, buddhi yoga, this is a conjunction, it's a compound word. There's two parts in it. Buddhi is intelligence, yoga is connection. Connection with the absolute truth. So connection with the absolute truth by intelligence, through intelligence, that is the essence. So now that intelligence can be at the Atma level, where I understand I'm not the body and the soul. Therefore, I have got nothing to do but material things. And therefore, let me be detached from material things. So when does Buddhi Yoga mean Karma Yoga? When the buddhi refers to Atma Gyan. And when the buddhi is based on Bhagavat Gyan, knowledge of God, then it will refer to Bhakti Yoga. So, okay, yoga means I have to connect. What do I have to connect with? to connect with some higher reality. If my knowledge of the higher reality right now is Atma, then I'll be trying to connect with Atma. Now connect with means I am myself the Atma, but I'm to connect my consciousness. I'm trying to realize that I am the Atma. So in Karma Yoga, a person is trying to realize that I am the Atma. So he has theoretical knowledge. And he's trying to do sadhana by which he can realize himself as the Atma. So when the buddhi is at the level of Atma Gyan, then the yoga that we perform with that buddhi will be Karma Yoga. When the buddhi is at the level of Bhagavad Gyan, one knows God, knows Krishna, then one will perform action to please Krishna and to realize Krishna and to love Krishna. At that level, buddhi yoga will be bhakti yoga. So that's why it's a stretchable term. In this context, it is referring to primarily karma yoga. So, by buddhi yoga, O Dhananjaya, keep inauspicious work far away. Buddhau sharanam anvicha. Now see the difference over here. Then end Krishna written 86:66. Maam ekam sharanam, surrender unto me. But Krishna has not yet revealed himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore he is telling, surrender to the intelligence. Take shelter in wisdom. Sharanam means surrender. Surrender, anvicha means go. Go and surrender to wisdom. Take shelter in wisdom. What does that mean? Without wisdom, I will just be chasing after sense objects of this world. But if I take shelter in wisdom, then I will not chase after sense objects. I will work with a long-term interest in mind. Buddhau sharanam anvicha. And he says, if you don't do this, or those who don't do this, what is the nature? Krupanaha phalahetavaha. Those who work for phala, for the fruits, they are krupanaha. They are, what is the meaning of krupana? How does Prabhupada translate it as?
Misers.
Now, this miser is a very interesting word in the sense that we know that misers are people who don't spend money. So, now what Srila Prabhupada is talking about, if you remember in 2.7 purport, Prabhupada quotes from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Yogarya Vidit Prasvalya Prayati Sakrupanaha. That one who, Yajnavalkya is telling Gargi, his wife, that one who departs from this world without knowing who he is a Krupanaha. So, what is the word Krupana exactly got to do with a miser? Miser conveys the idea of a person who has a lot of money but he's not spending it. So then, what exactly does it mean? See, in the human life, the wealth that we have is our intelligence. What is that humans have higher than animals? That is the intelligence. So, Shankaracharya says that kama krodhascha lobh dehe tishtati taskara jnana kama krodhascha lobhascha dehe tishtati taskara jnana ratna apaharaya tasma jagrita jagrita. He says, dehe tishtati taskara. Taskara means thieves. Three thieves reside in the body. Who are they? Kama, krodha and lobha. And what do they do? Jnana ratna apaharaya. They steal away the jewel of knowledge. Tasma jagrita jagrita. It's like if there are thieves in the area, then in the villages you might have chaukidars, guards going on. Jagte raho, jagte raho. They say like that, isn't it? So like that is jagrita, jagrita. We always alert. We always alert. So our the wealth. So we are not, what we are trying to do here is. Okay, let's make a table to understand this. So here we have a krupana and here we have a materialist. So what exactly is common between the two? Visible? Okay. So Krupana, what is his? He has money is his wealth. So what is the wealth over here? The money. For the materialist, what is his wealth? It is his, so not for materialist, this is a materialist. By materialist means we mean a non-spiritual person. Non-spiritual person. So what is his wealth? It is the intelligence. Or you can non-spiritual human being. So the wealth is the intelligence. Now what does the Krupana do with the wealth? He keeps it locked in a chest. He doesn't use it for his. The principle is no use of wealth. So what does he do? He keeps it locked in a chest. And sometimes the Krupanas, what they do is, the misers, what they do is, they sometimes tie a cold cloth around their stomach so that the digestive fire will not grow too much, so that they will not feel too hungry. And if they don't feel too hungry, they don't have to spend so much money to eat. So, they think I don't need to spend money. So, they have wealth, but they keep it locked in their chest and they don't use it. So, like that, what does a non-spiritual human being do? He keeps his intelligence locked in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. He has intelligence and he will surely use it. But he will use it only for this purpose. Materialistic people are intelligent. There's no doubt about it. Prabhupada will talk about his Jnani Shasara Bhutanam Parpur 2.69 and say there are two kinds of intelligent people. Materially intelligent and spiritually intelligent. These people are extremely intelligent. It's not without intelligence that, say, mobiles and cell phones and internet has been developed. A lot of intelligence. But unfortunately, they have kept their intelligence locked within the realm of eating, sleeping, making anything. That's what they ultimately think about. And they don't think about anything else. And then, now for a Krupana, if he doesn't use his wealth, this keeps it locked in that treasure, locked in the chest, then what is going to happen? The end result? You know, he is going to die without any enjoyment, without any happiness. So similarly, so what is the end result over here? For a Krupana, the end result is death without any enjoyment. Similarly, for non-spiritual, that is death without any spiritual credits. What he could have got, he doesn't get it. Death without any spiritual credits. And that's why this person is condemned. So now this is the meaning of a Krupana. So what Krishna is telling over here? Krupanaha falahetavaha. Falahetavaha means one who chases after the fruits. Now what are the fruits going to be? The fruits are going to be eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and aspects related with that. So when he is caught up in that, then he doesn't think of anything higher. And therefore he doesn't get any Atma Gyan and doesn't reclaim his eternal life. Therefore Krishna is telling such people are Krupanaha. Don't be like them. And what is avaram karma? Avaram karma, inauspicious work. Now Krishna, this verse is going to be the seed of the confusion for Arjuna, based on which he will ask a question in the third chapter. So avaram karma means inauspicious work. So Krishna is telling, what is inauspicious work? Even karma kanda. And going to heavens and enjoying over there, that is also going to be avaram karma, because that will keep one bound cycle of birth and death. But Arjuna thinks avaram karma will be fighting the war. So because of this ambiguity, of what is avaram karma. Avaram karma for Arjuna and for Krishna is different. So, for Krishna, it is what he is talking about over karma kanda that keeps one bound in samsara. And for Arjuna, it is fighting the war that brings sinful reactions. So basically what has happened is, Krishna is talking at a high level, but Arjuna has not ascended with him to that level. and that's why there will be a confusion afterwards. Therefore, for Krishna and for Arjuna, the same word is used, but the meaning is different. So we will resolve this confusion, or we will come to this, the solving of this confusion, when we Arjuna ask the question 3.1 and 2. But here, this is what Krishna is telling. That the work which will keep you bhogaishwara prasaptana, the aparita, that will take away your intelligence. That is inauspicious. Then what does Krishna say after that? What should you do? So take shelter in wisdom. That means understand your Atma. So don't get attached to results. Then how should one work? He will describe the next verse.
Buddhi yukto jahatiha.
Buddhi yukto jahatiha.
Ubhe sukrute duskrute.
Ubhe sukrute duskrute.
Tasmad yoga yujasva.
Tasmad yoga yujasva.
Yoga karma sukaushalam.
Yoga karma sukaushalam.
So, buddhi yukto. Engage with buddhi jahatiha. Act iha in this world. You will be able to get rid of. Jaha means give up. Ubhe sukruta dushkrute. You are good and bad. Now, this should have rung a bell in Arjuna's world, mind. Krishna is not just taking out giving of path, he is also giving the punya also. Avaram karma means anything that keeps us away from Krishna. Even punya can keep us away from Krishna. Can keep us bound in material existence. Do you have an example of somebody who was so attached to punya that they neglected Krishna because of that? Then can the Bhagavatam? Yes, second Brahman. They're so attached to punya. So busy with the rituals. They neglected Krishna completely. So ubhe sukruta dushkrute. Tasmat yoga ayurjas. So now Krishna is expanding on 39 when he said, Eshate buddhiyoga buddhya yukto ya vata karma bandhan prahasyasi. You become free from the bondage of karma. So he said, ubhe sukruta dushkrute. You become free from both. Therefore, Arjuna practice yoga. And yoga is the art of work. So now, what is this art of work? So Prabhupada explained that the art of work is that which will liberate one from material existence. And now here, Krishna is not, okay, you become free from good and bad works. Or good and bad results. But what will happen after that? What is the result of practice of karma yoga? Remember in verse 16, verse 15, Krishna hinted it. Amrutattvaya kalpate. But now he will elaborate it once again. He will mention it once again. Karmajam buddhi yuktahi.
Karmajam buddhi yuktahi.
Valam tyaktva manishinaha.
Valam tyaktva manishinaha.
Janma bandha vinirmuktaha.
Janma bandha vinirmuktaha.
Padam gacchantya namayam.
Padam gacchantya namayam.
So, karmajam, when you act in your this way, buddhi yuktahi, when you do your karma along with buddhi, again, phalam tyaktva. So he's saying there are many people like this who have given up the fruits, manishinaha, because they have conquered their minds. So he's given two results. First result is janma bandha vinirmuktaha. You'll become free from the samsara chakra. And not only that, after padam gacchanti anamayam. Maya means misery. Anamaya means no misery. So you attain the abode beyond misery. So this is the first time Krishna has talked about the spiritual world. He has not explicitly talked about it as my abode, because he has not introduced himself as God till now. You see, you attain that eternal abode. That means there is something beyond the cycle of birth and death which is to be attained. So earlier Krishna had talked about Swarga, that was the destination he talked about. So now clearly Krishna is revealing a higher destination beyond Swarga. So, you will attain that Arjuna. Now Arjuna gets the question, okay, that means, how long will it take to attain it? When will I attain it? That Krishna will describe in the next two verses.
Yadate moha kalilam.
Yadate moha kalilam.
Buddhir yati tarishyati.
Buddhir yati tarishyati.
Tadagantasi nirvedam.
Tadagantasi nirvedam.
Shrotavyasya shrutasya cha.
Shrotavyasya shrutasya cha.
So, this is Krishna using a slightly graphic or metaphoric language over here. Yadate moha kalilam. Kalila means forest. Moha is illusion or delusion. The forest of delusion. Buddhir viditarishyati. When you are, viditarishyati means to cross over. So when your intelligence crosses to the forest of delusion, tada gantasi nirvedam. Nirvedam means detached from shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. Shrotavyasya means what I have heard, and shrutasya means what I will hear. What does this refer to? Shrotavyasya means past promises and hopes of material enjoyment. Shrutasya refers to future promises and hopes of material enjoyment. You will go beyond both. Shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. Shrutavyasya in the past, shrutavyasya in the future. That means, Krishna is telling that buddhir vidharishyati. As long as our intelligence is in the forest of delusion, what is this moha kalidam? Moha kalila. That is forest of delusion. So when the intelligence is trapped in this forest, it thinks matter can provide enjoyment. The soul. When the intelligence comes out of this forest, it realizes that no matter can ever provide any enjoyment to the soul. So, all of us right now are trapped in the deep Moha Kalila. In fact, Kaliyuga means the Moha Kalila is becoming much, much, much thicker and deeper. So, when our intelligence is trapped in the forest of delusion, we think that material things will give me enjoyment. And we think that the purpose of intelligence is to get better material enjoyment. What is the purpose of intelligence? To get better material enjoyment. That means, yes, an ordinary person who is not educated, he will just eat on some dhaba on the street side. And I am a software engineer. I will go and eat in the 5-star hotel. So, the idea is, my intelligence is for getting better material enjoyment. What does Bhaktivinoda Thakur song Vidyara Vila say? Vidyara Gaurave Brahmi Deshe Deshe Dhana Parjana Kari Swajan Palana Kori Ekajane Bhulinu Tomare Hari. What is he saying? Vidyara Gaurave. I got a lot of Vidya. What was I doing with Vidyara Gaurave? Brahmi Deshe Deshe. For what? Dhana Parjana Kari. So, to get wealth, I went here and there. And what was the ultimate result of that? Swajana Palana. Kori Ekamani. At one point, I was just trying to take care of my family. That means basically it's acting at the level of eating, sleeping, waiting, defending. So, the intelligence has to see through the false promises of material enjoyment. So, when Arjuna, you can penetrate through the false promises of material enjoyment, then you have passed through this delusion. The first characteristic Krishna describes of one who has attained the perfection, who is ready to become liberated from material existence. And the next verse will describe the next characteristic. Now Srila Prabhupada talks about, so now this Moha Kalila for us can refer to advertisements, it can refer to magazines and books which talk about material enjoyment. In Arjuna's cultural context, it refers to the Vedic scriptures which promise heavenly enjoyment. And Krishna is telling you that you have to go beyond the Shruti. That means Shruti here refers to the Karmakanda scriptures, which say you go to heaven and enjoy. So he is talking over here about Madhavendra Pur's example. How of such a person, he recognizes all the dharmic rituals, but he says, this Punya ritual I don't want to do. Sandhya Vandan, Bhadra Mastu, very good. Bhavata Bho, Snana Tubhyam Nama. Sandhya Vandan means Hindu the Gayatri. Snana, yes, I know snana is to be done. Namo, but I won't do the snana, I just offer obeisances to you. Pitarascha tarpan vidhau naman kshama kshamatyam. All the pitaras, they have to be worshipped. He says, no, I offer my obeisances, but forgive me, I won't worship. Why I will not worship you? Yadava kuluttasya kamsadvibhishaha smaram smaram agamharami. Just by remembering that Yadu Kodi, Vidulandana, I'll be free from all sins and I don't need anything more. So what is he saying over here? That the scriptures may promise, oh, you do this, you become free from this many sins. You do this, you will get so much enjoyment. Okay, so here is giving Prabhupada is giving the purport example of person who has gone beyond the Mahapali. That's why he's quoting this verse over here. He's not attracted to any of the Vedic ritualistic activities. And Prabhupada explains that Shabda Brahmati Vartate, this will come in the 6th chapter. Person in Krishna consciousness transcend the limit of Shabda Brahma. Shabda Brahma means the Vedic literature. They can take us up to heaven, but they cannot take us beyond. For that we need to take Shantra Bhakti. Or at the way, we can go to Satya Loka or higher Lokas, but not beyond the material world, generally speaking. So Krishna will make it clear in the next verse. Shruti Vipati Pannate
Shruti Vipati Pannate
Yadastasyati Nishchala
Yadastasyati Nishchala
Samadhavachala Buddhis
Samadhavachala Buddhis
Tadayogamapsyasi
Tadayogamapsyasi.
So Shruti is the very good. Vipati Panna, that which is different kinds of. You hear it, but you are not influenced by it. Yada sthasyati, situated nishchala, anshik, then samadhi. So you see, this samadhi 2.43 is related with 2.44. Samadho na vidhiyate. So there one cannot attain samadhi, but here one can attain samadhi. Samadha achala buddhis, that is anshikam buddhi. Yada yoga vapsasi, one will attain yoga at that time. So Prabhupada explains how attain samadhi means one to have actually attained realization of Bhagavan in the purport. And this we attain by carrying the instruction of the spiritual master. So now, at this point, Arjuna has a question. He's hearing this, he's heard about this perfection beyond the cycle of birth and death, and then he's realized it wasn't understood by any promises. Krishna is talking at a very lofty level of transcendental realization. Arjuna is thinking, if Krishna wants me to become like that person, then will such a person fight or not? Because the English context is fighting, isn't it? So it is said that when a speaker speaks, the audience hears only 20%. That is if they are awake. And God knows which 20% they will hear.
So out of the 100, everybody will take 20%, whatever they like.
So what is happening is, and generally, the 20% that they take is based on what is in their mind. So, what is in Arjuna's mind? Should I fight? Therefore, he asks, okay, this is the ideal you want. I want to know, this person fight or not? And to ask that question, he asks the characters of the person. Because here, the description is a little abstract. The person will not be disturbed by any, attracted by any promises of any enjoyment. But what will the person do? How will he act? How can I recognize the person? That is what Arjuna asks in the next question. So here, Krishna has completed a section of Karma Yoga. It's not in one sense exhausted, but this particular analysis is completed. And Arjuna asks the question, okay, tell me the practical characteristics of the person.
Sita Pragyasya Ka Bhasha.
Now if you look at the language literally, what is his bhasha? How does he prabhashet? How does he speak? Kim asit? How does he sit? Kim prajet? How does he walk? Now, obviously, Arjuna is not asking Krishna about a model walking on a fashion ramp.
Isn't it? What is the style of walking? What is the style of sitting?
Now, it's obvious. So, in some situations, the literal meaning is clearly not relevant. And that's why the deeper meaning has to be taken. So the literal meaning, in some cases, it's so obvious that it doesn't work over there, that we have to go deeper. But when the literal meaning works, then one should not go beyond the literal meaning. So here, what is the meaning over here? Okay. Mukhya Vritti versus Gaun Vritti. You remember we discussed about this. So, when should Gaun Vritti be used? Gaun Vritti only when Mukhya Vritti contradicts other major repeated Mukhya Vritti statements. That means the Mukhya Vritti, what is going on, the main Mukhya Vritti is the direct meaning, Gaun Vritti is the indirect meaning. If you look at the Mukhya Vritti, it is certainly already Krishna has told you about the body of the soul. So certainly the subject here is not about bodily walking style or sitting style. So therefore, the Mukhya Vritti will directly contradict the essential theme that is being talked about. And overall, the frequency of the use of Mukhya Vritti will be far, far greater. It is not that in every verse one is trying to go into Gaun Vritti. What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of this? No. Therefore, if you look at the direct meaning, and when the direct meaning doesn't work, then therefore, the Mukhya Vritti, when it should be used primarily, occasionally Gaun Vritti can be used. Have you seen till now, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no reason to use Gaun Vritti. It's primarily Mukhya Vritti. Maybe just to understand that Arjuna represents us and body is like a chariot. So, you know, occasionally use it for a broad setting, but not in general. So now what do these questions mean from this point of view? So bhasha, now in our normal this thing, bhasha means language. But actually, what Baldev Devji goes deeper and he says, bhashyate iti bhasha, like we have bhashya. Bhashya means commentary. So bhasha refers to that which describes. Bhashyate, that which does bhashya. Describes, elaborates, or characterizes. So therefore, bhasha refers to characteristic. What are the characteristics of a person? Prabhashit, that refers to speech. How does such a person speak? And asit refers to not just physical sitting, it refers to how does he control his senses. And vrajet refers to move about. That means how does he engage the senses. These four questions will be answered in the remaining chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Kavasha will be answered in one verse, in 55. 56-57 will answer Prabhasheta. How does the person talk? And 58-63 will talk about how does the person sit? How does the person control his senses? Keep the senses inactive when they are not required to be engaged. And when they are required to be engaged, how does he engage them? That we'll talk about from 64-71. So we'll discuss this in the evening class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Jai, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki Jai, Gaur Bhakti.